We're on episode 3 of season 10, and the fact that we've made it 10 seasons means that either we're too crazy to quit or people actually like us. And Rocky, what do you think? It's kind of a toss-up, isn't it?
Yeah, well, okay, let's move on.
And so this is Rocky's first appearance of season 10. Also joining us for his first appearance of season 10, our buddy Mo is back. Mo, how you doing?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
So far, so good. The fact that Mo is here means there's not a hockey game tonight that he's got to go call, so that's good.
Nope, that was last night, the night before that, and we got 3 more this week.
Oh, good Lord. Wait, you had 3 in a row?
Yeah. These guys at this level, ECHL, man, it's a grind. I mean, I guess sometimes 3 and 3, they get 4 and 5, stuff like that.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And probably not all home games either, are they?
Oh, these ones were, because at the front half of the season, being that we're in Texas, the high school football rules to roost on Friday nights. And if you want to get people to show up for games, you got to really stack up the home games later in the season. So we're in the latter half now, and, you know, we're just getting all our home games in. You know, a majority of our home games will be in the second half.
Oh, that works out.
Yeah.
It's no secret, you know, I'm based in Raleigh. We've got the Hurricanes here, and it's interesting. The Hurricanes always get 2 or 3 games to open the season, and then they disappear for like this 10 or 11 day road trip usually out to the West Coast. Not always. They always have one right at the beginning of the season, and that's because the arena where they play shares parking lots with the state fair, and the state fair is always middle to end of October. And so basically the Canes get kicked out for about, you know, a week and change, plus the weekends on either side for the state fair to go on. And so they always have a very early season road trip every season.
Oh, well, the cool thing is this week we get, I think it's the first time ever they've been here in Allen. It's the Florida Everblades. I love that name.
Yes. That's one of the Canes. Well, for a while it was one of the Canes minor league affiliates. I don't know if they still are.
Yeah, I'm not sure what their affiliation is with this year.
Minor league hockey has some great nicknames. One of my all-time favorites was the one from Macon, Georgia.
Macon Whoopee. Well, they got another one now, the Ghost Pirates, Savannah Ghost Pirates.
Yeah.
That's a great name, too.
The Savannah Sand Gnats were the baseball team for a while. I don't know if if they exist still or not. Anybody that's been to the beach in Savannah knows that the Sand Gnats name is very appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
So we're not here to talk obscure sports franchises, says the guy with the Hartford Whalers sweatshirt on. We are here to talk about some sci-fi wargaming, and so who better to bring in than the guy who's still pissed about the Cepheus engine and the role-playing side of things with Traveler potentially having to develop an entirely new system to run on. And then Mo, who loves himself all things alien that under the sun there. And ultimately, kind of the premise that I wanted to start with, we talked about this a little bit before the show, but the premise I wanted to lead with is this, and I'll let you guys sort of steer it from, you know, after I throw out the initial thought here. But part of what makes sci-fi stuff so cool is a lot of the trappings of sci-fi, a lot of the futurism of it, right? The laser guns, the jet packs, the powered armor, like all the really cool sci-fi gadget stuff. And that's part of what makes all this a lot of fun. And down at the skirmish level and the squad and platoon level, like just last night, as we were recording this, Ozarski and the guys streaming Saturday Night Fights were doing a Xenos Rampant game. They were using Osprey's Xenos Rampant rules in a bunch of digital GW style figures, right? They had Blood Angels and Orcs with a K and all that stuff running around. And again, you know, one man, one figure kind of scale, the sci-fi stuff just sort of drips off the table. It's very obviously there. But at a certain point, as you start to aggregate things up, it's felt a little bit like you start to lose some of the feel of the sci-fi nature of things. And there's 2 examples I'll give quick. I was always a big BattleTech fan, played a lot growing up. I actually had a copy of it when it was still called Battle Droids, and then later transitioned over to BattleTech. At a certain point, I bought the Battle Troops expansions and sort of the BattleTech war game, right? I'm holding air quotes up that nobody can see on a podcast, but the war game where you're moving like companies and battalions around a map and
Battle Force.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And while it still seemed, it felt like BattleTech a little bit, cause you know, you still got all the classic BattleTech names and some of the graphics and stuff. I mean, you were playing a war game at that point, and there wasn't a lot that really made it uniquely BattleTech. Similar thing a few years earlier with the Hammer Slammers board game from Mayfair. It was Panzer Blitz in space. If it wasn't for the hover tank icons on the counters, you were playing Panzer Blitz, and there wasn't a ton of feel of sci-fi. It's almost like at a certain point you aggregate it up high enough, and the hover tanks are just tanks, and it's just, you know, a high powered unit that you're moving around the map. And to me, that felt a little flat and a little disappointing, because if I'm doing sci-fi stuff, I want all the cool gadget shit, right? I mean, I want the laser guns, I want the jetpacks, and we've seen large battles in sci-fi still feel like sci-fi. The Imperial Assault on Hoth board game is a bigger board game. It's not just a skirmish level thing. It's a pretty grand battle, but it still feels appropriately sci-fi-ish. And so, Rocky, I'll start with you. Kind of, what, if any, thoughts do you have on sort of where and how high you can aggregate sci-fi stuff before it doesn't necessarily feel like sci-fi anymore? And what can you do about it? I know you've played the Striker rules for Traveler stuff before, or integrated Striker and Traveler before, but also a variety of other things. You're a big fan of 5 parsecs from home and some of the others. Talk to us a little bit about where you think that line kind of slides around and how you feel about that divide.
Well, I'm actually going to sort of disagree with you in a way and say that I think the line exists wherever you let the line exist in your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Hammer Slammers game, partially because, not because the rules are Panzer Blitz, but because it creates a theme and a story on the table for me that I can see. I can see the book, I can see it in action, I can see the stories. I'm not so hung up over, oh yeah, it's just Panzer Blitz rules. I like that I have those hover tanks and they go faster and they shoot further and they're stronger, but yet you still can have the other guys, the mercenary forces with their other ones that can still reach out and touch you and hurt you if you don't play the game, fight the right way. Even some of the high level games as you go up there, again, it's a matter of the theme. In many ways, I think theme is what becomes more important. It's really theme over mechanics, and how the theme invokes the narrative. A good sci-fi game at any level is going to be making you feel that it's sci-fi, and you're not going to be sitting there going like, well, it's just another dice chucker in space. A lot of times that's because, I mean, Jim with the Xeno's Rampant. I mean, that looks it's just a war game. Yeah, I got it. But it looks it has the look and the feel. And many times that's what you need in a good game, a sci-fi game, is the theme to come through. I mean, even in the old days, I played Starfleet Battles, Accountants in Space. But we played it with the minis, and we could see the Enterprise, we could see the Klingons, and we could see the Birds of Prey out there and all that sort of stuff. And it was fun. It was invoking. The theme was coming through. So I don't know, Mo, what do you think about
that? Well, Starfleet Battles would be, I guess, in today's terms, the USS Excel. it's basically, like you said, spreadsheets in space or accounts in space. But I think, you know, I said this before when we were talking about this briefly. If you pull it back high level to any era, technically warfare or combat is combat, whether it be like Starfleet battles where you've got the Enterprise taking on a Klingon vessel or a bunch, let's say it's a fleet battle, or you have an away team mission. You just have phasers and, you know, transporters to get down there, things like that. Or you go all the way back to ancients or caveman times, sticks and stones. It's the same thing. Combat's combat. What changes is the tools used, whether it's sticks and stones or phasers and photon torpedoes. And with the game, you want to make sure that, like Rocky was saying, that you draw in the theme to the mechanics. Hopefully you can do that. And really the narrative is going to come from how much you're going to buy into the system and forget that it's a war game, or forget that it's basically following any sort of war game that you've played before. And it's pretty much the same thing. It's the theme that's going to drive the game forward, the narrative forward for you. Like you were saying about Aliens, another glorious day in a core. It's a simple skirmish game, but it's fun because, you know, you get these cool little alien minis and you get the Marines. And you're basically, whether you're playing by yourself or you're playing with your friends, everybody's using lines from the movie as you're playing, and you're trying to wipe out the Xenos and you're trying to get away from them and stuff like that. And it's just the relentless pursuit of you by the Xenos is what makes it fun. And that's the theme that draws you into the narrative. Like you were talking before about Battle Force. Yeah, it's just a standard war game at that point. It still has the BattleTech theme for sure, but you are still in your mind, you're playing out the grand battles that you read in the books. So yeah, the BattleTech theme definitely comes through.
Yeah. And I do think there's your point about at a certain point, you know, all aggregations kind of roll. There are some technical changes through time that do not apply across all eras. You know, at a certain point, non-line of sight artillery appears at a certain point in history.
Over the horizon, maneuver warfare, all that changes, of course, with technology. But I mean, in the end, it comes down to one guy killing another guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, up until World War One, warfare exists in two dimensions. Mm-hmm. After World War One, now you've got a third dimension to worry about, whether it's flight or submarines.
Or balloons.
So, yeah. Well,
even today.
Okay. Nina. But even so, the stray artillery spotting balloon in the Civil War wasn't a significant enough factor on the battlefield that you needed to build an entire model around it the way you need to build around 3D warfare for, you know, basically starting in World War One at the standard combat scales that we're used to dealing with. The point being that there are some changes over time that don't necessarily universally translate from dawn of history into, you know, however far in the future we want to go. I do think there's something to how do you make it feel to yourself and what is it that what are the stories that you're imbuing those representations on the tabletop with? And so, you know, Rocky, you're getting away from simulationist and into theater of the mind here, aren't you?
Simulation? You're talking sci-fi.
I know.
And that's exactly the point. I mean, the sci-fi really has to engage the mind. I think that's why, to me, most sci-fi games tend to have better or go more heavy into graphics. Certainly back in the old days, I mean, GEV, Ogre, the original, you know, 295 paper sheet was fine, but nowadays, what do you got? 3Ds, printed minis, your glorious day in the core. I mean, we're talking minis, we're talking high speed graphics. All that is because, I think, to me, is because it is trying to engage the mind, and the sci-fi, rather than exciting the let's figure out how to battle, you're immersing yourself into the story, and the big part of the story of that is the graphics. Some of these older games go back and they get the nice big cleanup and then all the graphics get brought out. Or, I mean, look at the latest Kickstarter now. There's one from Osprey out there, the, you know, 200, whatever it is, $300. I don't know what it is. Too much for me, though. But it's a bajillion of these little tiny, you know, plastic fighters and ships and whatnot. The game, who cares? I mean, I don't think that's what people are buying it for. I think they're buying it because they want that. Those images, and they want to be able to have that on the table. Talking about
the Homeworld Fleet Command one from Modiphius?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's Modiphius, not Osprey, but yeah.
Sorry.
You had me thinking I missed something there for a second. I was like, wait a minute, when did Osprey do this? Because Osprey doesn't normally put their stuff on Kickstarter, and so you threw me for a loop.
See, that's how much, I mean, I looked at it, and I said, yeah, I'm going to pass on that one, because I partially saw the price.
Well, but, you know, on top of graphics, Rocky, the other thing that really does tie in for these things for us is the IPs, Star Wars, Star Trek, whatever it is, BattleTech, especially anything that's been in movies or television, you know, Battlestar Galactica, all those things. You already have a buy-in because you watched the movie, you liked it. So you're going in with a bias already that, you know, like me, Aliens, I love Aliens. So it's like, okay, I'm going in with a bias. I'm going to love this. I'm going to go in there. You're going to have to make me hate it for me to dislike the game. But I'm going to buy in because of the IP, which is going to help with the narrative. And of course, like you said, you look at the graphics and stuff, and that definitely pulls you in that much further.
Yeah. Well, and I think the graphics tie in with sort of almost that more skirmish level nature of the appeal, you know, that lower level appeal in sci-fi, because you talk about the narrative and the stories that you build, and those stories are often built around individuals, even if they are operating within the context of something much bigger. The Star Wars, Star Trek sort of stories we all know, but in BattleTech, like if you grew up reading some of the original BattleTech books like I did, following the Grey Death Legion around, there are very specific characters that you are interested in following around. And that's what you're more interested in. That at a certain point, those get almost aggregated out of the story where, yeah, that person's in command of that unit, but that unit's just a counter moving around on the map. And he's just one of, or she is just one of 500 people represented by that counter. Whereas you get back to something like Another Glorious Day in the Corps, like that's your dude, your one figure running around on the map there that sort of jumps out a little more.
Well, BattleTech is the same way, because if you're playing traditional BattleTech, it's a skirmish game, mech on mech. And, you know, the drawback to that, though, is, you know, the most you're going to get out there is maybe 2-on-2 at most, a lance on lance. So you're talking 4v4, and you're going to be just planned for an 8 to 12 hour day because of how slow it is to play, you know.
Alpha Strike moves a little quicker. Some of the newer rules have streamlined things some, but yeah, I mean, if you're playing a large enough battle, then yes, it can absolutely take a while and can turn into a bit of a slog at times. Not going to disagree, but it's because you've got that singular thing with which you can identify, I think, that really makes a difference. And ultimately, like I don't want to steer us into the whole sort of, you know, well, what is sci-fi? Kind of like our what is a war game? So like we ain't doing any of that. There's no point in that, right? But part of what makes sci-fi cool is a lot of that gadget stuff that you need, that you don't need, but I kind of want to see represented in the game. And at a certain point, I want to be able to see the distinctions of those things as they're being played. The old Grav Armor game from Heritage, I think it was. I mean, we're talking early to mid 80s, that you know, the combination of certain vehicles having an EW effect to them. Some tanks, not just tanks, some of the mechanized units were hover capable, some were not. You know, that those kinds of distinctions, I think, helped Rocky, going back to what you were saying with sort of that you know, that feel that you're looking for, and how do you identify with those kinds of things. I think some of those games really did that better than others as I saw them over the years. But to me, the more sci-fi feeling games were always at a much lower scale.
Here comes the 10th season of the Armchair Dragoons podcast, mentioned in Dispatches. Let's thank all of our Patreon supporters who pledged at the top level. A huge thank you to Stagger Wing, Patrick Geraghty, Fred and his dog, Mike Quigley, Joseph Knorr, Hethwa War Games, Robert, Patrick Mullen, Kevin Bertram, Chet Bell and Trab Corey for their support of the Armchair Dragoons and helping us to bring you the best strategy gaming content on the web. You too can sign up as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Which I think is exactly, I'm not going to disagree with you. And I think that's because those lower scales do allow you to see either through you know, actual physically on a counter, be it a battle tech or, you know, a fighter, a ship or something like that, you can see it. And you can have a very good representation of the science of the fiction. You connect to it easier when you get to the higher levels. In the Traveler wargaming universe, you get all the way up to like Invasion Earth, and you have these counters that have like, you know, a 500 factor, and it's hover capable, which means it can just travel anywhere it wants on the map. And okay, that's sci-fi, but you're right. At that point, the connection to it and grabbing the theme, grabbing you, loses it. There's a reason why Snapshot is a much more engaging game than Invasion Earth. I mean, Snapshot, you're right in there, you're inside the ship, it's skirmish level, which I think a lot of times, Mo, when you're aliens, that is skirmish, and that engages you right there on the spot, and it really pulls you, the player, in, because you can actually many times see yourself through your character right there. So you can go higher, but yeah, it's harder to engage, which is why I think so much of it is, you're right, so much of it is down at the lower levels, but I think it's because you're right, it engages the mind much better.
Yeah, no, that's true. And you know, when you get down to skirmish level, tactical level, I've always felt more invested at that level, because you are drawn into the fight, you're not looking at it from above. And when you see your guys dropping around, you're like, wow, we're really under strength now. It's really it's hitting a fan now, and it's falling apart. And what did I do wrong? You know, and sometimes it's your fault. Sometimes it's just bad luck. But that's what the commander on the ground feels as well. And that's what those guys in the fight feel. Then there's other games, you know, other things with it. It can change things up too, like Cav. I don't know if guys have ever played Cav, Combat Assault Vehicle.
Yep.
It's kind of like similar to Battletech. They have these walking Cavs, you know, Combat Assault Vehicles. They're mechs. And the thing that's cool about that is you have the Cavs, you've got air, you've got rotary and fixed wing, and then you have tanks, infantry, all things like that, missile carriers, all sorts of things like that. And it's combined arms when you're playing. You can play, it plays very fast. So you can play like with 30, 40 models on a table and get a game in like 4 hours or so. And what happens is as you take hits, everything just degrades. So you're not having to track things like you do in Battletech. It just kind of degrades gradually until you're just ineffective or dead, one of the two. And yeah, the thing that's kind of neat though is each of the factions have their own specific capabilities, their own doctrines. So the Terrans are able to do something that the Aedons or Aedonese are not able to do. And that's where you get that feel is kind of given to you, because I've got something that you don't have and you have something I don't have. And how are we both going to use those things to our advantage? And of course you have ECM and stuff there too, but pretty cool stuff.
So with all this in mind, Rocky, what are some of the favorite sci-fi war games that you've played over the years? What are some that stick out as particularly enjoyable or ones that you think did a better job than others of putting you in that sci-fi mindset and kind of getting you ready, you know, primed to do some speculative, futuristic, cool laser gun shit?
Well, I gotta go back to Starfleet Battle. I mean, we were young, we were, you know, stupid. We struggled our way through the rules. But what was really neat about that is exactly what Mo was just talking about. Every different nation, faction, race had a different set of strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Some had fast reloads, some had slow reloads, some had really slow, some had short range, some had long range. And taking what you had and putting it up against, you know, nowadays I guess we call it asymmetrical, you know, and seeing how do I use my strengths against their weaknesses but not fall into their strengths that are going to be taking advantage of my weaknesses. Even nowadays, the newer versions like Talon, same thing. What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? I have advantages. You have advantages. How do I, you know, fight to maintain mine and keep yours away? That's really what it all comes down to. And in all these games is there's something asymmetric about it, and you match yourself up. And the thing about sci-fi is you really can explore and lay out a lot of those because of the science fiction. You can really put it out there into a game and really bring that asymmetry into play and to make it that much more enjoyable.
Yeah. Other than Excel in Space, what else you got?
Talon. Talon's up there. Some of the more, again, you get into some of the more skirmish games. 5 Parsecs from Home is nice because it's a nice and simple, plus some light role-playing elements in it. But again, you sort of like just got to figure out, you know, who you're armed up with, what are you armed against, and you put yourself out there. I'd be interested in hearing Mo. If Mo hears anything other than aliens out there, that he would be talking about.
Have I ever told you about this game called Aliens? No, I mean, I do love Aliens. Don't get me wrong. I love Aliens in all aspects, all the universe, the storyline, in the movies, the books. And of course, you know, there's two versions of it, or two ways you could play. You could play the board game, Another Glorious Day in the Core. You could also play the RPG, which just gives you a world that you can explore in all sorts of ways. You don't have to be the Marines. You can go in there and be space truckers. So, and you're dealing with, you don't even have to deal with the Xenos if you're playing the RPG. You could just be dealing up against Corporation, against Weyland-Yutani, whatever. You know, you can have it could be set in one of my other favorite settings from a movie is Outland. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie. Sean Connery, Peter Boyle. Just love that whole...
It's classic.
You're just isolated in space, and, you know, you could see how people could go mad aside from the drugs that are part of the storyline, but it's really cool. But aside from Alien, I'll go back to Cav for a minute. I have not played the new version that they've got out now, Strike Operations, but I played Cav 2.0 back in the day. And I even used to demo that, and as well got involved in some of the development and co-authored one of the supplements. I think it's a real fun game. It's just the other thing I loved about it was it was so ripe for adding in, you know, the fluff. And that's what we were doing in one of the supplements, was building the fluff, starting to build a universe out before Reaper kind of pulled back on it and kind of the floor came out from underneath us on it. But it was, you know, ripe for adding in any type of background. Now you've got something similar right now with Polyversal from Collins Epic War Games, which has a backstory. It's a, you know, it's a sketched out backstory right now, but you have the capability to, as the gamer, play it out, not just have it be the skirmish game essentially, or, you know, the minis game, but you can then add in your own fiction and build the universe, help build the universe. And I think that's really cool, because that's what helps you, or to me at least, helps the gamer get more vested in it, is because you are into the story and the whole why we fight. And then if you can add to that, that just allows you to buy in more, I think.
Yeah, I was going to circle back around to Polyversal at some point, because I knew you had gotten your hooks into it. I've been watching from afar the development of Polyversal for over a decade now, because I can remember when Byron had it at Origins in 2011, maybe. If it wasn't, it's 11, been a while. Yeah, somewhere right around there. I mean, he's had it for a long time in demo form. One of the great things I like about Polyversal is it is minis independent. Like they do sell certain minis from a couple of different manufacturers that they've pre-statted for the game, but they do have a little online engine that allows you to stat out just about anything else you want. So for instance, I've got a couple of boxes of old Warhammer 40K Epic minis from the mid 90s that I've still got in some, you know, in storage here at the house, that I could pull up the little army maker tools from Polyversal's online site, and I could stat those things out for a Polyversal game with no problem. And what is cool about that is, in ultimately, like you're representing sort of one mini equals one vehicle, but the game scales well enough that you can fight company level fights pretty easily, and almost light battalion fights, you know, with a little bit of time and mastery of the rules. And Rocky, going back to your point of the graphics make a difference, having the minis on the map definitely makes a difference when you're trying to get into that sci-fi frame of mind. So yeah, Mo, I'm definitely excited to see where Polyversal goes. And I'll tell you that when you said that Reaper kind of pulled out of the Cav business there a little bit, was that before or after their giant Cav Kickstarter a couple years ago?
Oh no, that was before. That was well before. And then Talon went and took it up, and they went and did the Kickstarter, and they went with the plastics instead of the metals, because I got to say that without a doubt, the most impressive miniatures for mechs were the Reaper Cavs, the originals. I mean, when you, if you picked up one of those minis, especially the super heavies, and you chucked it at someone, there's a good chance if you hit them in the head, they're going to be, you know, sleeping for a few minutes, and they're probably going to end up in a hospital needing some stitches. Those things were chunky as hell. And they're beautiful too. So now what they did was they went with plastics because it's much cheaper than metal.
Yeah. This past summer at Origins, I don't remember specifically which booth it was, but whoever it was that had the Cav stuff on sale were giving out little starter packs with an abbreviated Cav Strike Ops book, kind of the starter rules. And then I want to say it was four minis in there. You had to assemble them yourself. It was like two blue and two gray that they a little starter, just enough to play a basic skirmish battle, get a sense of the rules, but they were giving them out for free at the booth there. So I have them here somewhere. Where I walked away from the camera for a moment, I went and grabbed one of my old TSR classics from way back when, and I've got some glare on the screen here, but Revolt on Antares. This one of the old TSR micro games from the famous, infamous 81 catalog that we all got in our red box basic, you know, Mold Bay basic sets. The Revolt on Antares is one of those micro games, along with They've Invaded Pleasantville and Bug Eyed Monsters and Saga and whatever else. This was one of my all time favorites growing up, playing this one a lot. I had a lot of friends that had copies, so I've been able to keep mine unpunched for 40 plus years, because I've always used somebody else's punched copy to be able to play with. And anytime somebody wanted to play, I'm like, great, get your copy out.
Are you planning on using that for your retirement nest egg or something?
I mean, it's probably worth dinner at Chipotle, maybe, just because nobody knows what it is anymore. It's not the shrink wrap. I just haven't had to punch it like ever, and hoping to keep that streak alive. So if anybody ever wants to play Revolt on Antares, I am always happy to play with your copy. So, you know, being a role player as well as a Wargamer growing up, obviously there were a lot of the, there was a lot of crossover in there with some of the sci-fi stuff. I was never a huge Traveler fan. And I know Rocky's clutching his heart right now, and Gary's probably just turned off the podcast. I was never a huge Traveler fan. I was always a fan of the BattleTech universe and latched onto that one fairly early. But between BattleTech, the very early Star Wars stuff, and then a handful of different homebrew things that we pulled together, I didn't lack for things that I was able to or interested in playing, you know, that I didn't have to go off to Traveler or Striker or something similar. Of note, I wasn't a big minis gamer growing up really at all. We had some minis we used for our role-playing stuff, but I wasn't doing a lot of sci-fi mini stuff, so that's probably where Striker didn't appeal to me quite as much. BattleTech, obviously, like, you're going to use some of the minis, but the Battle Droid set that I started with had cardboard stand-ups in it, and that's sort of where I started. But the vast majority of them were fairly low-level skirmish things, and Revolt on Antares is actually an exception to that. You have some individual leader counters in there that have a variety of special abilities to them, but the rest of the units, aside from some of the graphics, are pretty standard war game-ish units. You know, at a certain point, it's, you know, it's OCS in space, if you will. Just kind of my experience there. Something that I noticed, just the way each of us were mentioning things, Rocky, you've got a bit of a naval background, and it was Starfleet battles for you. Mo, you've got a Marine background, and it's another glorious day in the Corps for you. I've got an Army background, and it's Revolt on Antares and BattleTech for me. And what's interesting is our game preferences in some of those cases predate our military affiliations. Mo, any thoughts on, are we just predisposed to certain things?
Yeah, I think people are, you know, predisposed to, you know, things that they will pursue professionally as well as in the hobby space. And then there are other people that live vicariously in the hobby space and get to do things they never did. You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to get really heavy into this air combat game and be a hardcore pilot in my head. And meanwhile, the only time you ever get on a plane is to, I don't know, fly to Cancun or something like that. That's about it as a, in coach. But it is funny, though, how people tend to stick with what they're familiar with, what they know. And you already have a vested interest because you have either a professional background in it to some degree, or you have, you know, read a lot about it. You've already invested enough time and interest in it to where you can buy in on the system. And that's when you can look at a game and say, yeah, this is stupid. This is not how this works, or this is, what was this guy thinking when he designed that? Or, hey, this guy's on the right track. I agree or disagree with some of the things, but overall, it's an enticing game. It makes me want to come back and play it again. But I think there is something to be said about sticking with what you know.
Yeah. Rocky?
Well, I just want to circle back to something you said that made me think here. You talked about statting out your units and stuff, and you're asking me which ones I like, and then I look back on it, why were the games like Striker, or even a lot of these Striker was great because it had a model in it that you could take of different tech levels and put them out there, so you could have the barbarians up against the colonial marines, and there was a game mechanic to help you figure that out. One of my favorite series, I guess, collections of games is the Full Thrust, Dirt Side, and Star Grunt universe. I mean, they all use a pretty similar mechanic. They all have a similar, they all use a shared universe. But the great thing about all that is you get to stat out your own units. I mean, it's a lot of these, you know, basically it's build it yourself. You take the tools, it gives you the rules, the mechanics to go ahead and model or simulate or to play a game with all those different pieces in it. And that's really, in many ways, what a lot of these science fiction games do, is they give you a different model. You're not just playing, you know, the Germans against the Soviets in 1941. You can play, just go all the way out there. I mean, you know, I was listening to an interview once with Frank Chadwick, and he was talking about his Striker rules. Some people came up and said, hey, this is the greatest set of Ancients rules we've ever played. Partially because it goes back to something that Mo said before, or you said, Brant. It's some of the constants of warfare are constant, be it in Ancients, be it in the future. And if you can find a model that can take all that together, well, then that can be enjoyable, and that can enlighten or excite or stimulate your mind and put you in that theater of the mind mode.
That's one of those topics that came up in, you know, in episode one from this season, the idea of sort of the constants of warfare going from ancients all the way into space combat in the future was part of our discussion around what kind of game engine might possibly be appropriate for some sort of open game license in the wargaming world, similar to the way the system reference document and open gaming license for the underlying D&D mechanics allowed people to build a crap ton of different kinds of games off of that same basic engine. Because I think, Rocky, isn't that the basis of the Cepheus engine for Traveler?
So Cepheus engine uses a system reference document from Mongoose and Legacy Back Far Future, but it's made available under the OGL.
Okay, so it uses the OGL license, but not the same system reference. Okay, got it. But I do know that there were some D20-based sci-fi type games that were released under the OGL using the D&D system reference document. So our question was, what kind of system reference document might you be able to develop in the wargaming world that you could make available through an open game license and allow anybody to build whatever sort of game they wanted to off of this common rules engine underneath? And the example that I kept defaulting back to was the Commands and Colors game engine. Now it's not an open thing at all. The game engine essentially, I mean, it's Borg's design. And while Borg has sold iterations of this to a lot of different publishers like GMT or Compass or Days of Wonder or whoever else, there's Commands and Colors, ancient, medieval, Napoleonic. There's the there's a Commands and Colors World War One. There's Tricorn. There's the
Samurai.
Thank you. Is Samurai a standalone or is it an expansion for Medieval?
No, that's a standalone.
It is a standalone. There's Battle Lore, which was the fantasy one that Fantasy Flight did. There was Battle Cry for Civil War. Obviously Memoir 44 is the one the vast majority of the world is out there is familiar with. But there was also a space one that used the Commands and Colors mechanics for space fleet interactions. And so as Aardwolf had pointed out on the podcast, independent of era or scale, this one rule system seems to accomplish a lot for you. That you go back to, you know, Mo, some of those constants of warfare that run from end to end throughout current and potential future history. There are game engines that can accomplish all of that for you, and that's kind of cool if you could get there and share that across the board. Some,
I don't think war games necessarily need that because we already have that. Just open up a war game, any war game, and you're going to have generally very similar, if not the same things. You're going to have your Zox, your CRT, your supply lines, or your lines of communication, whichever way you want to call it. Those are going to be the basics. And then, of course, you have whether it's going to be single step, you know, double, you know, two step or multi-step units and have breakdown units. Of course, you can expand that out however you want. But generally, war games are going to follow that base pattern for the most part. And then, of course, you can add or change things that you want. And then, of course, if you can innovate some mechanics or chrome is what generally is going to be added. They're all going to follow the same pattern, I think, for the most part. So I don't necessarily think you need an OGL for that. And we don't want to get into that for war games because in 20 years, you know, Hasborg might come out and one of their subsidiaries may say, you can't do that no more. And
then idea was never to use the existing OGL that the Hasbronians have thrown out there, but to develop either use the Creative Commons one or a similar license to the way the Paizo's taking the lead on it. But the intent is to have a whole bunch of folks sign on to this nonprofit and publicly owned new open gaming. It's not the OGL open gaming, but it's an open something license of some sort. It's the ORC, but I don't remember what the ORC all stand for. Mm-hmm. But in any event, something similar to that as an open rule set that's available through some sort of Creative Commons kind of thing that's got a system reference document, as long as you include the SRD intact, iterate off of it however much you want. I think that's one place where sci-fi stuff could potentially take off, because you could, you know, for the sci-fi wargaming piece, you could use a common set of mechanics as the base, add whatever chrome you want and take it in whatever media license or not direction you feel like. There's a lot of directions you could go with that. Some licensed, some not licensed, but very well known. An example of one that was never a media license, but one that all gamers of a certain age are familiar with is the Star Frontiers universe that the old TSR had, you know, put out in the mid-80s, the early and mid-80s. There's a lot of us that all still remember the Vrusk and the Drasolite and the Yazarians just because we were, you know, we gamed through a whole bunch of those things. And when the Nighthawks game came out, suddenly we had a space combat war game to go with Star Frontiers that we could play out those bigger space battles if we wanted to. So I wasn't planning on standing on the OGL soapbox tonight, I promise, but you guys brought it up. So you dragged me into that. I'm blaming.
Oh, that's right. Pass the blame off to other people.
Absolutely, right. Man. You kidding? I was a lieutenant. That's my job. Pulled up a comment from a Board Game Geek conversation about this at one point, and you know, look, you could draw a fictional map, change the colors on some OCS counters, change the name of the game to War on Sudafus 5, and like use the OCS rules. And going back to what Rocky has said earlier, what is it you're visualizing in your head? What do those things represent to you? Change the panzer divisions to hover tank divisions, and the supplies go from, you know, fuel and ammo to sort of laser cores and, you know, I don't know, plutonium packs or whatever, and off you go. Like you're now sci-fiing your way through some great ice battle somewhere. You know, it's I think the rules almost don't matter at that point, do they?
No, they don't. That comes right back to the theme. I mean, I'm looking forward to see Coin, the whole Coin series is up to, I don't know, volume 99,000. But I mean, I'll be honest, I'm looking forward to the Mars one.
Red Dust Rebellion.
Red Dust Rebellion. I mean, I'm looking forward to that one because the theme.
Yeah.
I mean, Coin to me is sort of like for me, it's been overdone, but that's me. But I'm looking forward for the Red Dust because of the theme. And that's what I think sci-fi wargaming can do, is it brings you in, it can engage you back with the game, mostly through the theme. Sometimes it's an IP, sometimes it's the visuals. But what it all comes down to is it engages you, not with the mechanics. It's not, the war game isn't really the important part. It's really the look and the feel of the game at that point.
Did you jump on Robotech Reconstruction at all?
I won't say it's on order yet, but it's on order. It's to be shipping in this week.
All right. Well, you mentioned sci-fi plus Coin, and you know, Red Dust Rebellion has been under development for 7 or 8 years now. I'd have to go back and look at the interview I did with the designer back at my previous location. But we interviewed him about Red Dust Rebellion before GMT had even picked it up. When he was first talking about it as kind of this homemade thing on BGG, we reached out to him and said, hey, it's kind of cool. You want to talk about it? And we got a pretty good interview with the dude out of it. And then not long after that, GMT picked it up. I won't say that there's a causal link, but, you know, time sequence is a prerequisite for a causal link. So, but yeah, I mean, we've been following that one for a long time, and I'm looking forward to seeing it also. I think it's going to be kind of cool. So, you know, Mo, other than the alien stuff, any sci-fi thing hit your table lately or soon?
No, not lately. I have not played anything lately, but I'm probably going to go back to, there's a couple that are done by a microgame design group. Kerry Anderson is designing Final Frontier and Clavius, those games. There's a few others that are just fun, and they're not like a high speed, intense war games, but they're a lot of fun. You know, you're slugging it out on the moon or across the solar system. And it's just, like I said, just good old school war game fun. And not rules heavy, like I think maybe anywhere between 6 and 10 pages of rules. So just get down there and you get out on the moon and you have the U.S. fighting the Soviets over control of the moon and stuff. And you got your, you know, different types of troops out there on the moon. That's pretty cool. And the quality of the games is great. And for the price point, you can't beat it. And I just love, I always say they feel like garage kits. And I say that in an endearing way. I don't say that in a disparaging way, because they're made. He has like his own die cutter that he makes them with and stuff. And they're, yeah. What's that?
I said, oh, yeah, no, he's.
Oh, I thought you were going to interject here with something.
He is just below where Victory Point Games was.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, Victory Point Games was another one that I just I really enjoyed their games for that. Again, that garage kit feel, and you really feel that you're getting something that your friend made is what it feels like to me. And I really enjoy that quite a bit. Now, don't get me wrong. I love, you know, high end production like anyone else does. But at the same time, you kind of like these ones because you feel like you're in on a secret that no one else knows. Hey, I got this really cool war game that nobody else plays or nobody else knows about. Meanwhile, a lot of people are playing them and they do know about it. But because it's kind of a little outlier, it's a little different than your standard game by GMT Compass, whoever. It's something that a lot of people don't know about. So it's like you got this little best kept secret.
Yeah. So Clavius and GravArmor are the two that have always stuck in my memory forever as two of the smaller footprint, lesser well-known war games that I've always been a big fan of. Before people, you know, back when they were just, you know, sci-fi board games, before we got into the distinction of, is it a war game? Is it a board game? Is it an adventure game? What is this? Before anybody cared. And the reason those two things stick out, those two games in particular stick out for me the most, is they were both reviewed in Dragon Magazine number 73. Back in the early 80s. And Dragon number 73 was the first issue that I ever bought off the newsstand. I'd read some Friends issues over the years, you know, for the 2-3 years leading up to that. But that was the first one that I ever bought off the newsstand myself. And I bought it the summer we moved to Germany. And so that was the one that I had in the backpack while traveling that I read and reread and reread and read some more on that summer move. And those two games were both reviewed in there. And so, you know, years later, when Carrie Anderson selling Clavius off of his website, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. That's the same damn game that I remember reading about 40 years ago at this point. Stuck out.
Of course, you got to throw in the Solar Marine as well. You know, that's a given. If it has Marine in it, you know, I'm going to have to at least check it out. Most likely buy it just because.
Just because. Yeah. Well, that and I remember the nuclear mortars from Moonbase Clavius. And then GravArmor, which was a fantastic game with just shit-tastic graphics. God, the original graphics were awful. So somebody got a 64, you know, count box of crayons and wanted to use every single goddamn one of them in that game. And on Board Game Geek, you can get a redone set of graphics for GravArmor that actually makes it playable with much less embarrassment.
So. Well, you know, when you look at something like that, like nuclear mortars, it's going back to like the Davy Crockett is what it's kind of throwing back to. So, you know, it's kind of pulling from that time of sci-fi golden, the sci-fi golden era, the 50s and 60s, when you had all those great and campy sci-fi movies that really inspired the designers that made these games in the 70s and 80s and even today that have made an impact on these guys to where they, when they design, they go back to that time.
Rocky, what you got there?
Well, as you mentioned space and you know, Clavius and the Marines, and Mo, your comment about how we go to the past to pull forward to the future. Marine 2002, I think, is a great example of how a sci-fi game also can allow us to both look at the future in a different way and also apply it to the past. So in Marine 2002, you got your Marines on the moon. The big sort of, it's the wrong word to use, but the gimmick of the game, what really makes that one different than your other war games is the line of sight. So you're not able to see units, but what you can do with your forces, you can fly something overhead, or you can bounce your Marines. You can go bounce up and you get different line of sight. So the whole idea is you're bouncing around high, low, and trying to sight the different units. So it's a way of a new approach to line of sight. But really, it really is a great way of describing how drones on the battlefield are affecting us right now. Do I have something that can raise my line of sight right there at the tactical level or at the company level out there? So it's not just that sci-fi allows us to sort of explore the future, but in some ways it allows us to release ourselves from the
restrictions.
Sort of the restrictions of today, mm-hmm. explore something new, and then hey, maybe let's see if we can apply this backwards. And so to me, Marine 2002 is a great system, a little piece in there, if you want to talk about drones on the battlefield and their impact today.
Well, I think that's the beauty of sci-fi is it comes down to one word, freedom. You have freedom to create whatever you want. You can create the backstories for, you know, you can take a base generic war game like you were talking about before, Brant, with like an OGL and, you know, and have the basics of any war game, insert era here. And instead you decide, I'm going to go with a sci-fi and, you know, sci-fi theme, and I'm going to come up with a backstory, some factions, and no one can tell me I'm historically wrong because this all exists in my mind. And I can just arbitrarily assign numbers to different units the way I see fit. The key then, of course, with the design is making sure that it's balanced, at least balanced enough to where it's not, you know, you're not letting your inherent bias in your design give one side the guaranteed win. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the beauty of it, though, is it gives you that freedom to create. And of course, if more people get into it, then they can spin off of that and create more. And then the world grows. which is what we saw. We're going to go again back to BattleTech. You know, FASA had BattleTech, and then you had all these fiction books, and that just expanded everything because it wasn't just a simple game of these Ralph Partha miniatures and these rules. It was, you know, you're fighting your different factions, you know, your House Davian, Marek, whatever. It's like you kind of assigned yourself to a unit or to a house, and you bought in on it. Again, it all comes down to graphics and the backstory, why we fight.
Yeah. Everybody had a crush on Katrina Steiner. I'm not wrong. I mean, everybody was mad when the meta plot married her off to the Davians. I do want to make sure we get a plug in here for a couple of things from our buddies over at Lock and Load, because as we talk, you unintentionally fed straight into where I was going to go here in a second, Mo, and that is being able to take something that is, you know, basically ignoring the history, right? Because the history doesn't really exist. The Lock and Load guys have a game. It's bit of a hokey backstory to it all, but who cares, right? It's essentially sci-fi gladiatorial combat, and that's the Hollow Cell game. I know you've seen it, Rocky. Yeah. I'm not sure if you have. It's a card-driven war game of sort of man-to-man sci-fi gladiatorial combat is really what it is. My son enjoys some tabletop games. He's not much of a war gamer. He's a very heavy digital gamer. Hollow Cell is the one tabletop game that he absolutely glommed onto and just dove into nonstop. We actually have both the original and the reprint version from Lock and Load because he ended up with both of them at different points. And Dave used him as the demo minion at the booth at Origins for a couple of years to show off Hollow Cell to prospective customers. The origins behind Hollow Cell, it was originally a Wild West gunfighting game. And when Dave was having the conversation with the designer, he was saying, you know, look, are you sure on all the historical research stuff here? Because if the slightest thing is wrong, there's going to be some history nut that's, no, that gun could shoot a half a hex longer than you're saying it can. And he said, look, if we make it a sci-fi game, nobody can piss and moan. Like, who's going to argue with you that that laser gun can't actually shoot that extra half a hex? Where's your proof? You know, it's not like you can prove it one way or the other. And so Hollow Cell started as a Wild West gunfighting game and became this sci-fi gladiatorial game. My son is a huge fan of it. It's got a little bit of a world building backstory to it. Not a ton, but it's a fun game. And you know, as a beer and pretzels or a filler, you know, before you start a bigger game session one night, it's a great game for that. Unfortunately, I never really caught on. I think Lock and Load are discontinuing because the stuff's been on sale for a while and it looks like they're phasing it out, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, they do have the other game, Space Infantry Resurgence, that was originally released like 10 or so years ago by Lock and Load. That was Gattardo Zancani who'd done that one. They redid it in a bigger, huge box set. And a couple of years ago, they put it out on Kickstarter. So they've got like an IP for that that they can expand out. And they've got the One Game Federation aside from Resurgence, but that in its own is an IP that they can build out into different games, operational, strategic, or tactical games, things like that.
Yeah, the space infantry world is definitely expanded and is kind of cool, and I think has some legs for those guys. The other one I was going to mention for Lock and Load that unfortunately again might have been a one and done kind of product, the Falling Stars game that Dave kicked out a while back. It's one of those hybrid. There's a lot of role playing rules to it, but there's a bunch of actual war game rules in the book that you can either play them as larger set piece battles or follow individuals through wherever you go. The role playing rules are good. There's nothing spectacular about them. Like they're pretty solid sci-fi role playing rules, but there's nothing better or worse about them than the alternative rules or the traveler rules or any of the other rules out there. What is really cool is the Falling Stars backstory. Like the first 15 pages of the giant 300 something page soft cover book. I really want Dave to go hire a writer and take those first 15 pages and turn it into a series of like 10 novels, because there's a lot of really awesome stuff in the backstory in the universe that they build in just those 10, 15 pages right at the beginning of the book, in terms of, you know, launching all these colonies to the stars and then suddenly like contact with them completely stops and everything out there just disappears. And then suddenly like 300 years later, contact picks up again. What the hell happened? Like, where did everybody go? And you know, what's been going on for the last couple of centuries? It's a really cool backstory that has like 15 different plot hooks all built into it and gives you a lot of canvas to paint on to build your own expansions off of that existing storyline. Very, very neat bit of world building. I really hope they go back to it. I'm just not sure they will, because I don't know how well Falling Stars actually sold. When they were cranking it out. unfortunately, you know, look, some things just don't catch on, and it's sad, but that was one that just based on the backstory piece, I really wish had. It would have been fun to watch that get expanded. Rocky, where are we going with Traveler stuff at this point? Are we actually going to see a Traveler war game again?
Gee, I hope so. But, I mean, yeah.
Wasn't Lost Battalion working on one a couple of years ago?
I don't know. At this point, the war games are for the RPGs. I don't think there's really anybody out there really working unless like I do it and I don't have the time. It's going to be the more adventure gaming, character scale, ships as characters. Sort of thing that we're going to see. I don't think we're going to really see. Mongoose sort of tries a little bit, but I don't think they're really going there. That's if there's a tie-in to be made with some miniatures, maybe. I mean, you have Squadron Strike Traveler out there, which is Birds of Prey in space.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to see another good something other than like reprints of Triplanetary yet again, which is not a bad game. Don't get me wrong. Triplanetary is a great way to teach vector mechanics, vectors to people. So, and it's a fun way to do it.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Squadron Strike. There's that and Attack Vector Tactical. So if you're into space dogfighting, the guys from Ad Astra have, I don't want to say a definitive product, but certainly a very accessible one. The rules take a bit to learn. But one of the things that I found looking at some of the stuff that Ken's done with the interface design for the paperwork is that once you understand how the graphic design of your ship sheets work, it's very intuitive once somebody teaches you what to do with it. Teaching you what to do with it isn't always the easiest thing. But once you get it, you can swap out pretty much any ship you want. And those ship tracking sheets work very, very well and very cleanly. What's cool for Squadron Strike is these guys have built their own web-based digital engine in which to fight the games. And they have games going 2-3 times a week that they organize through their company Discord. We've had them at every one of our digital conventions. The Ad Astra guys have been there. Ken's been a great supporter of those things for us. That's not the only reason I want to give him a shout out here on the podcast, but it certainly doesn't hurt. It's been one of those things that they've been with us all along, but people really aren't sure what they're getting into with that game because Ad Astra's not a big, they're not a big player in the wargaming world necessarily. It has a lot of name recognition the way the GMTs and Compasses and Lock and Loads do. But once people get a chance to kind of play the game, they're like, wow, this is kind of cool and really have a lot of fun with it. It's nice that their rules engine supports so many different kinds of media license properties. Obviously, they can't advertise those things. so you got to sort of file the serial numbers off the edges a little. But the fact is you can cross-pollinate a lot of media licenses into that one rule system. And that's kind of neat. That's a fun way to tackle things. And so, Rocky, I'm sure you got some experience with it there.
Yeah. Their Avid is the graphic is the Avid's. The Avid app is great to use. It makes it go a lot better. But yeah, you're right. There's a learning curve. But yeah, once you get past it, actually for a 3D combat game, it's really nice. It is a nice engine.
Yeah, yeah. Mo, probably not one you know much about, huh?
No, I'm pretty safe to say no. I mean, I'm familiar with it, but it's just not something I've been very exposed to. Not that I'm against it, just haven't been exposed to it.
Yeah. So it's, next one of the ACDCs, you need to hop in there and check it out.
Yeah, that would be cool. Check that out. always open to new things like that.
Yeah. All right. So as we need to... This is going to be a little shorter episode, just the nature of when we are recording this. We are on an off night recording this because of some other things going on around Dragoons HQ and other places. But I am curious, and this is going to take a minute for everybody to answer kind of anyway. Mo, looking across the sci-fi landscape, if there is a particular media license you would like to see or a particular game you would like to see turn into a broader media license somewhere, where do you think a good crossover can or should exist from some sci-fi property that everybody knows that ought to be a game or some game that ought to be blown up into a bigger sci-fi property somewhere? What's something people should be paying attention to here a little bit more?
Well, there's this little game or little movie, I should say, called Alien, and had a couple of I'm just kidding. I would love to see. Now, this is going to be going out really into into fantasy land here, I would love to see a couple of things. Number one, I would love to see, going to go back to BattleTech here. I'd love to see a BattleTech series done.
Amen.
Like Game of Thrones style, like done for adults, not like the cartoon was. But I would love to see something serious going back through the Succession Wars and the Clan Invasion, the whole nine yards. That'd be great. And I think that would actually, you know, get people into the storyline enough to get more games out of that. Maybe even get a redo of the Succession Wars board game. But as far as other board games from known IP, I'd love to see more done with The Expanse, because that's another fantastic world, universe, I guess you would say, that could be explored a lot more in different types of games, I think.
Are you familiar with The Expanse RPG at all?
No, I've not. I've not had any experience with that.
Yeah, it's. I believe it's the guys over at Green Ronin that have that one.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and there are a lot of folks who are big fans of The Expanse media property that are huge fans of the RPG material. Mm-hmm. Green Ronin spit out, that they say, look, this is the closest match to RPG and media property feel that they've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah. And I would also, you know, this is, I'm going to say this, I know it's never going to happen. It's a little too late anyway, but I'd also love to see a resurrection of Firefly. Being that we're talking sci-fi, you know, of course I have to bring that up, but I would love to see something like that. I'm glad that there are games in that market. I would like to see, they do have the, was it Brigands and Browncoats or whatever, which is the tactical skirmish style of game, which is really fun. And that one's enjoyable. I'd like to see that get a couple more expansions as well to kind of give that a little bit more life. But that's it as far as my immediate ones that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure after the show, I'll think about five others.
Yeah. Well, there's the, for The Expanse, there's the Ships of The Expanse book that they've got, but that Expanse RPG system does include a pretty robust spaceship model and the ability to do space combat out of that as well.
So, yeah, being able to run the Rocinante would be awesome.
Rocky,
yeah,
Raven.
Yeah, but that it's an RPG space combat game. So yeah. Think of, yeah, ships as characters. It's nothing. I mean, for a media and for a franchise that talked about, you know, hard science. Yeah, I know it's science fiction.
Yes.
But the realistic, the vectors and all that sort of stuff, that's just crying for something like a Squadron Strike or Attack Vector, or even going back to a simpler Mayday,
yeah,
or Triplanetary even sort of approach to doing things. And that's not in there, but I hope it is soon enough. And when you talk about franchises that are just crying for war games, I mean, I think Mo would love this one.
Hell to the, yeah, I got that one. That's Alien, yep, I got that. Marines.
I mean, yeah, that one's crying out for, I mean, I know you got your Glorious Day and everything. Maybe that's the battle version.
Oh no, I got that too. Prelims. I got the RPG version as well. I definitely have all that. Oh yeah, I bought everything. I got everything already on hand, and then waiting for the Heart of Darkness to come in.
Yeah, if it's got Marines in it, Mo's gonna get it, right? I mean, it's just.
And Alien, I just love the story behind it and everything. It's just so much. It's really engrossing, and it's also you know Jaws, the movie and the book. At that point, everybody saw the great white as the ultimate killing machine, eating machine. That's what the Xenos are when you think about it. Although I thought, and this is going to sound blasphemous for some people, Aliens itself, I absolutely love that movie. It's got some of the best lines ever. It's got great action, but it also, in a way, kind of cheapened the Xenos compared to the way they were in Alien. In Alien, you had a crew that was being basically terrorized, hunted down, and killed by one. And yep, you were seeing, wow, this thing is just deadly. Now you got like hundreds of them coming at you, and they're just like wasting them. Of course, because they had, you know, much better firepower. But in a way, as much as that was fun, it took the horror part out of it. And it was not as, you know, scary as the first one was. Whereas that first one really just, wow, you were worried every time anybody was peeking around a corner. You're like, oh man, don't let it be there.
Well, but I think two things happened. One, I don't think the second one was trying to scare you the way the first one was.
No, it was an action movie.
Yeah, but the other thing is there was much more unknown in the first one that contributes to what is known by the time you get to the second one.
Sure.
And so I think the underlying world had obviously advanced some, which is what you'd expect through the passage of time, that they'd been able to learn some from what happened the first time around and potentially other encounters with the Xenos after that. I'm going to absolutely echo that BattleTech is, I'm not sure there's a more well-developed media licensed property out there that has never had a significant TV show or movie associated with it than the BattleTech world. I can't think of one. I mean, you had a Warcraft movie at one point. Some folks might argue for Warhammer. Warhammer versus BattleTech is almost a toss-up in terms of the amount of media development between them. The biggest difference is Warhammer just keeps reinventing the exact same thing because they got to sell new toys, whereas the BattleTech guys keep iterating on the story and moving it forward through time, which I think is to their credit. I would love to see him just start, you know, peeling some of the novels off the stack. Go grab the four or five novels to include the second generation of the Grey Death Legion, and let's just turn that into an extended TV series. Let's go grab some of the Stackpole BattleTech novels and go turn those into a series of movies. I mean, there's so much good material there that you could build off of. Before you get to the Succession Wars and the clan invasions and everything else.
Well, you do like they're doing on Paramount Plus with all the stuff that Taylor Sheridan's doing with Yellowstone. They're just spinning off into different, shows adjacent to that. You can do that with BattleTech. If you were to go in there, you can start off with, like you're saying, Grey Death Legion or something like that, Third Succession Wars or Fourth Succession Wars, and then go on from there to the clan invasion and the post-clan era and stuff, Dark Age, if you wanted to go there. There's a lot you could do.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, there's more than enough story material that you could mine for those things, just in the existing novels, never mind all the meta plots that are built into the games themselves. So there's so much you could work with there. I think that is definitely one that you could see. And I would love to see that one. I'm not as in the tank for Firefly as a lot of other people are. It was
blasphemer.
Yeah. Oh, well. I think there were some strong acting performances by some really cool, fun folks. Mm-hmm. I think there are other media properties that are stronger that would make for better long running games than those. I'm still waiting for a particularly good Battlestar Galactica tabletop war game. The digital games, I've not played, but folks I know and I trust that have played them have said they're good. They're on the better side of good rather than the bad side of good. So I mean they're not coolest thing ever. But if it's a media property you enjoy, you won't be disappointed with the games. You'll have fun with them. But I would love to see a good tabletop Battlestar Galactica board war game. I think I would have a lot of fun with that. That's not just, an iteration on the Attack Wing series of minis games. that's something that I would like to see. So those are the two where I think I would enjoy kind of, spending a little bit of time in the sci-fi media world. And of course, if anybody wants to reprint Revolt on Antares in a full size production, instead of the little micro game boxes, I'm here for it. I'm more than happy to go back to that well again. So, as we wind this down here, Rocky, I'll let you go first. Mo, we'll let you follow up. But as you look at the world of sci-fi wargaming, what are the things that you think really matter? What are the things you think don't matter so much? And what should gamers really focus on when they're worried about kind of sci-fi wargaming as we've been discussing it tonight?
I think that the big themes that we hit on that really resonate with me is theme and freedom. And that is really what makes all my games, sci-fi games, enjoyable. The theme, something about it grabs me, something about it engages me, how it's visually depicted or how it's presented. And then the freedom that I can, I'm not tied to, this isn't real, or no, that's impossible, or that would never happen, or you would never, that could never be. No, I can do that. I can play that out. And in many ways, it allows you to engage, sci-fi gaming allows you in some ways to engage in extremes. I mean, rather than going like, well, this is sort of asymmetrical, well, let's just go all out.
Yeah.
Let's have a force with nothing but, clubs versus somebody with, nuclear artillery. Let's see what happens. Maybe it doesn't go the way you expect, but I got the freedom to find out, and that's what it all comes down to for me. Mo,
clubs versus nuclear artillery, that would be kind of cool.
I'm pretty sure that's one of the main battles in Dune, isn't it?
I would say clubs versus nuclear artillery. We'll have to look a little closer, but there's a good chance that Ty Bomba has done an Ancients game, and if he's done it, there will be nukes involved. So, so there we go. We'll have that. But you know, the other thing to spin off of what Rocky was saying about that, freedom is really key, as is theme, but also scope. Because you want to be able to, especially a game like we have not even touched on, which I was surprised about when it comes to space games, is Space Empires 4X. You know, you have these planets that you're going to, and then you have to build ships and you have to move fleets around and stuff like that. That gives you that sense of scope when you're having these fights. And then you can have planetary assaults as well with the expansions. So you have that freedom of doing what you want to do. You want to keep it small, you want to make it bigger. And if you get that sense of scope, that vastness, you know, you're moving from one planet to the other, and you're going to have to, I need to build up some ships and then create fleets or task forces, whatever you want to call them. Well, we call them fleets, and then send them off to different planets to conquer or defend them. Essentially, all you're doing is you're refighting the Pacific War in World War II. You're just chopping off your task force and going and taking islands. You know, it's the same type of thing, but it's in space, and you get that with the right theme and everything. You definitely will be drawn in, and you're thinking about conquest of your sector of space. And I think really it just comes down to, can you draw people in with the theme? The mechanics will, of course, matter, but really it's going to come down to chrome, and that's what's going to really bring the theme to bear.
So audience, I promise we didn't seed that with Mo about Space Empires 4X as a promo for what's coming up at Origins this summer. We do have a couple of Space Empire 4X games on the plan for the Wargame HQ at Origins this summer. So Mo didn't know that as he's bringing it up.
No, I did not. And I was just surprised, because that's kind of like one of the first go-tos when it comes to space games. Is, you know, Space Empires 4X is what a lot of people will go to. But we went a little more deeper than that. We went further back, you know, and get into some of the older games and that are still around, which says, I think that speaks volumes. Games like Starfleet Battles, BattleTech, all that have been around 30 years and, you know, even 40 years. So that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it is, for what we were, where we started out talking with this, where we kept it very wargame focused and less attention on the media license, in terms of at what point does it still feel like a sci-fi game, or how do you ensure that the aggregation doesn't strip the sci-fi feel out of things? I don't want to say the media licenses are irrelevant. Obviously, they sort of help the audience get into that mindset, like Rocky was talking about. But I don't think you have to be tied to a media license to be able to create that. And look, there's some very major media licenses that we barely mention. I mean, we talk about Starfleet Battles. That's Star Trek original series up to a certain point, after which Amarillo Design Bureau doesn't have a license to do anything later than that. I think it's just original series and animated series. Is all they're allowed to do, right, Rocky?
Yeah, the Franz Joseph tech manual is really the basis of what they can build on.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, you know, there are some folks out there who are huge fans of it all that can give you the very minute details of what can and can't be included where. But we didn't really touch much on the larger Star Trek universe. We barely mentioned Star Wars. We barely, you know, we mentioned Dune once. You know, I mean, there are a bunch of major media licenses that we didn't talk about, because the world of sci-fi wargaming is just way too darn big. We also talked about some of the smaller, more obscure titles like Antares or Clavius or Grav Armor, whatever, but we didn't go through the old SPI back catalog of some, you know, pretty out there kinds of sci-fi war games, including one of the ones that's still one of the most well-regarded today, and that is Freedom of the Galaxy. You know, again, it's sort of the off-brand Star Wars, but it's a great game that folks have loved for a long time. There's a variety. I mean, we could do an entire show just on classic SPI sci-fi war games. There are like 30 of them. We could just, you know, bring in some fanboys and just do that, nothing but that, for an entire show. And so I don't want people to think that this is the universe of sci-fi wargaming. We we were really sort of interested in exploring a particular facet of what makes the sci-fi wargaming feel like sci-fi. And I think we've done a decent job of talking about that tonight. So that's cool. We want to maintain some scope here and not try and be all things to all people, because that'll get us out, you know, that'll get us in trouble in a hurry. If folks are interested in some other discussions about sci-fi wargaming, we've got them linked down below the episode description here for this episode. But, you know, we've had Chris Weave on here a couple of times talking about Space Navy kind of stuff. And you know, in particular, he's very well acquainted with the Honorverse as a Bu9 founder and member, but he's talked about a variety of different Space Navy, space combat, you know, big capital ship type warfare. That's sort of his shtick, is what do navies in space look like? And that's great. You know, as we talk about things where Mo and I might be a little more familiar, you know, Mo, you're talking about Space Empires 4X being an analog to the Pacific War stuff. You know, again, Hammer Slammers is the original stories were heavily characterized by David Drake's experiences in Vietnam. But some of the later stories, there's a lot of just straight up World War II tank combat inspirations in those.
Well, you know, there is one other one that did pop in my head, and I should have thought of it earlier, that I would love to see an IP that I would love to see expand out not only into TV or streaming or whatever, movies, but also into board games. And that is Galaxy's Edge.
OK,
I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but
I am not.
It's been out for several years now. Kev Sharp actually turned me on to it. And it is basically it's Star Wars for adults. It really does follow a similar kind of feel to Star Wars. There is a thing similar to the Force involved, and the people are, you get sucked into the individual stories of the people and the fight between the Galactic Republic and the Empire, which is now, you know, kind of just, they're going back and forth in this big fight. And it's really cool because you get down to the tactical level with the Legionnaires, the legions that are in there, the legionnaires, and, or as they say in the books, the lieges, and then the different characters for the Empire and things like that. It's really fun. It's real immersive, great stories, and I think it would make for fantastic tactical, strategic, and operational gameplay.
Yeah. The other, I mean, you know, again, just in terms of some of the bigger, less obscure things that we didn't talk about much, we didn't mention the Renegade Legion series from FASA.
Yeah.
You know, was it came out after their BattleTech series, but again, the Renegade Legion series had a very well built, well connected set of games that went from you know, micro tactical ground combat all the way up into sort of interstellar fleet battles. So that was another one that we didn't really mention. Just that there's a lot to cover here if we're trying to cover the entire universe of sci-fi wargaming. So at some point, we'll have to kind of pick something where we can fence some of those into the conversation and come back around to them. And that's cool. Like, we'll do that at some point in the future. It's a big world to talk about. Big worlds, you know, if you want to get really particular. There's a lot to cover. And I don't want to say I don't feel bad about leaving stuff out. You know, I'd love to be able to talk about all of them, but at a certain point, I got to edit all this together, right? And I don't need a 7-hour edit job.
What about Wing Commander? Another one that would be great. Another great tabletop or miniatures game. The old computer game, Wing Commander.
I seem to think there was a tabletop adaptation of that.
Did they? Now I got to find it.
Maybe it was just like a fan-made one, but I really think I remember seeing a tabletop version of that somewhere along the way. It could have been a homebrew that I saw at a convention somewhere.
That would be cool.
That somebody put together. Look, there was a bad one, but there was a tabletop game for Last Starfighter at a certain point, right? I mean, it was not a good game. Anybody pretending otherwise has
it all came down to the Death Blossom at the end.
it kind of did. And the problem you had with Last Starfighter is it was Ogre in space. Like, one person was playing Last Starfighter, one person was playing literally everything else. Because if you had two Starfighters, they'd always end up shooting each other when they flipped the Death Blossom on.
Yeah.
So you know, it was sort of lining everybody up until you could flip that switch and then hope you killed enough of them to score enough victory points. It wasn't much to it. It was not a good game. But if that was a universe you wanted to play in, you had that option. So, you know, again, we're not trying to just do an inventory show here. We can probably do that at some point in the future. But, you know, the fact that we're trying to wrap this up, and we're still naming properties or games or, you know, experiences that we've had, this could drag on for a while, you know. So all your games belong to us.
Oh, jeez.
I have a feeling only about half of our audience got that reference. Maybe.
Zero Wing.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. So, Rocky, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you being able to be here. And you're going to be back later this season. We're going to talk about you know, different kinds of rules and rules presentations. We got a couple other things on the docket for you coming up this season, right?
Yeah, we've got the rules and I don't know. We got some.
Yeah, we got a couple of things out there. And Mo, I'm sure we're going to find a reason to bring you back somewhere along the way in here somewhere, don't you? We already have you scheduled for another one yet?
Nope. Not that you've told me about yet.
Like I know what I've got scheduled. I got to go back and look myself. So
there you go.
We'll figure it out here sooner or later. But yeah, I mean, we've still got at least 10 episodes of this to go.
Probably for the annual What Is a War Game show. Yeah. Or is that a war game? Define a war game.
Can we make that a decadely show? I mean, come on. We did this as the live stream of Gary and Dan.
No, I know. I just think it's funny. It just always keeps coming up.
In our defense, right? Yours, mine, Rocky's, Gary's, whoever. Like, it's still content, right? It's still stuff we get to talk about when it's a slow news day. We can always dust that one off, right?
It's things that people will be driving to and from work, listening and either, you know, nodding their head up and down going, yep, totally agree. Or they're going to be like, you effing idiots. What the hell are you talking about?
As long as they're listening, man, I'm happy with it.
Exactly.
So, no, we've got the one on rules coming up that we talked about. Rocky, the other one we've already got on the schedule for you is the one we're going to talk about, China. And that one's, you know, getting more interesting by the day. And I have a feeling that from flash to bang, right, from when we record to when we release, it'll probably change, which is a little unfortunate, but you know.
Yeah. Things are just keep popping right up.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, you have to intro the show with little Nana.
Yeah. I will say that I saw somebody put a thing online the other day and said, you know, everybody laughed at the Air Force calling all those things weather balloons. Who's laughing now?
Yeah. So now they're octagonal. So I guess there must be like war game pieces floating around up there.
I'm sure. I just found that kind of funny. You know, everybody always joked about how every UFO the Air Force called a weather balloon. And it's like, you know, who's laughing now? So. we are going to talk Buckeye Game Fest. We got Gary coming back to talk about that one. We are going to talk some, we got two different episodes coming up this season. We're going to talk about AI, and one of them we're going to talk digital AI and development of digital AI over time. The other one we're going to talk about sort of tabletop AI and bots and the automata that you can use as sort of a pre-programmed opponent on the tabletop and how that can work. And then Rocky wanted to talk about book war games. So at some point we got to find somebody else to join us with Rocky to talk about book war games. And so that'll be kind of fun. Audience, we still have a couple of episodes later in the season that we're holding open for some of your suggestions. So either pop in our forums or drop us a comment here at the bottom of this episode or over on our Discord or tweet at us or any of the above. What is it on Mastodon? Oh, toot. It's a toot on Mastodon where you need to toot at us and let us know. So there's a couple of different options there that you can reach out to us. Give us some of your suggestions for what you would like to hear for an episode this season. In the meantime, thank you, Mo, for being here. Really appreciate it. And thank you, Rocky, for being here. Really appreciate you guys taking the time tonight. So
sure, always fun.
And
very much.
Yeah. And so, audience, hope you had a good time with this. We'll catch you next time on another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches.